back to the Siddur, the prayer book. This is where a Jew cries his heart out. This is where a Jew talks to Hashem. This is where a Jew connects with Hashem. Our whole life experiences all connected to the prayer book. We're up to, on the bottom of page 17, the sacrifice. Since the prayer corresponds to the sacrifices, the morning prayer corresponds to the morning sacrifice, so we start with the sacrifices. But before we start with the sacrifices, there was an introduction. Before you get to the sacrifices, there's an introduction. The second Torah portion in the book of Leviticus, Parshas Tzav. So we'll read, it's the opening of Parshas Tzav, the opening of the second Torah portion. And this was the introduction to the sacrifice. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemer. God spoke to Moshe saying, Tzav is Aaron, command Aaron. Although all mitzvot are called mitzvot, a commandment. But usually the Torah says, Daber, Emor. Here the Torah says, Tzav, command, which is unusual. And also he already said, speak to Moshe. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying. So he should have said, Daber al Aaron, speak to Aaron. It says elsewhere in the Torah, Emor al Aaron, say to Aaron, Tzav, command Aaron. With the bun of Lamer, what are you to command him? Zois Torah Sa'ila, this is the law of the burnt offering. Hiya'ila. This is the burnt offering shall remain on Moikda, on the firewood and the altar, kol halayla, all night, ada boiker, until the morning. The offering, the sacrifices, were all offered between the morning, beginning with the morning daily sacrifice, and concluding with the afternoon daily sacrifice. In between, all the sacrifices were offered. But then, after the sacrifice, and after they sprinkled the blood, they had to offer the different parts of the animal, or in the case of a burnt offering, the entire animal, except for the skin. So they had to offer the animal on the altar so they could finish it in the afternoon. But the Torah is telling us here, you can burn it all night. You're allowed to burn it all night. It's only the sacrifice, the slaughter has to be during the day and within this window. Between, sandwiched between the daily morning sacrifice and the afternoon daily sacrifice. But the burning of the fat and the burning of the portions of the animal, in the case of the burnt offering, the burning of the entire animal, that can be done all night. It could be done. Torah is not telling us it must be done. On the contrary, ideally you should burn it during the day. Why delay? But if it's impossible, there were too many sacrifices, you have all night to burn it. But make sure to burn it at night. You can't wait till the next morning. Because then you violate the prohibition if you can't leave over. Everything has to be done at the right time. So the time to burn it is at night. If the night is over and already it's dawn, it's the next day, then you can't just bring it onto the altar. It's too late. You can't take the sacrifice that was offered yesterday and burn the leftover, or the parts that have to be burned on the altar, and bring it up to the altar in the morning. If it's already on the altar, then it's one thing. But you can't bring it up to the altar. So he says you burn the sacrifice. You could burn it all night till the morning. The eish hamizbeach tuken boy, and the fire of the altar should be kept burning on it. In other words, the fire on the altar had to burn 24/7, all day and all night. There was a fire, and that's why Rashi says he uses the unusual expression tzav, command Aaron, because there's a lot of money involved. It seems like a waste of money. You know, you may want to save on taxpayer money. What's the point of having the fire burn constantly? It was very expensive. You constantly have to feed the fire, constantly need logs of wood, especially in the desert. Where did they even get wood? To have constantly logs of wood, and you have to constantly have the fire on the altar 24/7. So you need a command. You need, you know, stiffen your spine. You may resist. A waste of money. It's also, this is not just a commandment for Aaron, it's a commandment for all future generations. When we have the temple, we have to keep the fire going constantly. So this was the preparation for the sacrifice. Before you even do the sacrifice, you have to have a fire. You have to make the fire. And the fire has to be burning constantly, 24/7. And then he says, this was all before the first morning sacrifice. The love Ashakoyin midevad. The koyin shall put on his linen garment, his like shirt, which covered his whole body. It wasn't like our shirts. It reached all the way till his feet, all the way to the bottom of his feet. Umichnesevad, and his pants, Yilbash al besari. And the halacha says that he actually had to wear all four garments. The priest, in order for a priest to do the service, this is part of the service. What we're about to learn, we're about to do, was part of the service of the Kohen. A Kohen can't serve unless he's wearing all four garments. Just like an Israelite can serve. If an Israelite serves, it's disqualified. The service is disqualified. If a Kohen is not wearing his four garments that are designated to him, in addition to the two that the Torah mentions, which is his shirt and his undergarment, in addition to that, he also had to put on his hat and his belt. Then why does the Torah only mention these two garments? There is an opinion that actually says, because that's all he had to wear is these two garments. He didn't have to wear any other the other two garments. But that's not the accepted halacha. Halacha is that he did have to wear all four garments. So why does the Torah then only mention these two garments? So he says, and then he says, yilbash, he should also wear. So he says, teach me that also to add the other two garments. And he says, because these two garments, he's coming to teach me a law, a special law that relates to these two garments. The Torah says that his shirt that he wore, which covered his whole body, midday bad. Midday means it has to be according to the proper measurement. It can't be too long if it drags on the ground, or if it's too small, it's too tight on him, then it's disqualified. It's as if he's not wearing the garment. It has to fit him perfectly. Can't be too loose, it can't be too tight, it can't be too short, too long. It has to fit him perfectly. Like a designer suit. It has to fit him perfectly. And therefore, that's why the Torah spells out only out of the four, only the shirt to teach us this specific law. And then he spells out the undergarment because the Torah adds he should wear it on his flesh, on his body. Obviously, where else is he going to wear it? On his pinky, we're talking about his undergarment, surely. But he's coming to teach us that that's the first thing he has to wear, the first thing he has to put on. When all he has is his body, he's naked, he is not wearing anything else, because he just went to the mikveh, the Kohen before he does the service is to go to the mikveh. So the first thing he puts on is the undergarment. And only then is it kosher. If he changes the order, if first he puts on his shirt and then the undergarment, no, it's not enough for him to take off his shirt. He has to take everything off because he has to put the undergarment when he's naked. All he has is his body. There's nothing else. And then put on the shirt. And then he puts on the hat and then the belt. So he's wearing all four garments. V'heidim es hadeshen. And that's the first service in the temple. V'heidim es hadeshen. He has to remove the ashes. Which ashes? The Torah spells out. Not the ashes from the wood that you're burning. No. Asher toicha la'esha sa'olam is bad. The ashes from the burnt offering that you burnt. Yesterday's burnt offering. Probably the afternoon burnt offering that you burnt. And the ashes of the offering, you have to take a scoop from those ashes. V'sameh, you have to place it etel ha'mizbeach. Next to the altar. He would go down the ramp and then he would walk on the east side of the altar, three tefachim, like around a little more than 9 inches away from the altar. So he shouldn't bring soot to the altar or, you know, cause the altar to turn black. And he would walk north side from the foot of the ramp, like walk to the north, like 10, like 15 feet. There was a spot there, and that's where he would leave the ashes. That was also the spot where they used to bring the crop from the birds that were offered. And also the ashes from the candelabra and the ashes from the inner altar. They would bring it there. And the Talmud says one of the miracles in the temple, it was all swallowed up in the ground. They used to leave it there and it was all swallowed up. Then he continues, Ufashat es begadav, he removes his clothing. V'lavash begadav achirim, and he has to wear other clothes. What do you mean? The Talmud says it doesn't mean that he removes his clothing like we find by the high priest in Yom Kippur. He's constantly changing his clothing. He's removing his four set of garments of linen, white, and then he puts on the eight garments. He removes the eight garments and puts on the four. So here we're talking about a regular priest. So you would think it means remove his priestly garments and put on his weekday clothing, his regular clothing. No, that's not what he means. He means he also has to wear the four garments. He also has to wear the priestly garments. But he has to wear another set of garments. Not as nice as these garments. Maybe it's a little more worn out. It can't be torn. Kohen can't do the service with the garments that are torn. And if it's dirty, there's no laundry mat in the temple. Once it's dirty, you don't use it anymore. Everything was rich in the temple. There's no washing, no laundry mat. But it's not the same quality as the garments. And that's what he says. It actually says, why does he have to say he takes off the clothing and then he puts on different clothing? He should have just said he puts on different clothing. Obviously, if he puts on different clothing, you understand that he took off the clothing. So he's explaining. The Torah is telling why should he take off his clothing. Because what's he about to do? He's about, he should remove all the ash. It was a whole pile of ash. It's not something he had to do every day. But when the pile became so much, after all the sacrifices, all the ash, everything is reduced to ash, so you would have a big pile. So in the times of the holiday, they would actually make the pile, leave the pile there. It was beautiful. Everyone would see how busy and active the altar was. It was a beauty. But throughout the year, it becomes too much. There's a pile, too much ash. You have to get rid of the ash. The wood won't burn well. It's sitting on top of ash. So it's time to get rid of the ash, to remove the ash. So where do you remove it to? El mechutz lamachne, outside of the camp, outside of Jerusalem. A makom tov, but it has to be in a clean place, a place that's pure, not in an impure place, but outside the camp. So that's what the pasuk is saying. Remove your clothing because you're about to deal with ash, a lot of ash. The first part, you just took a little scoop of ash from the leftovers, the ash of the burnt offering, and you placed it on the side of the altar, on the side of the ram. Fine, side of the ram. But now we're talking about removing all the piled on ash. It could be an accumulation of many days. So you're going to get dirty. So that's what the Torah says. Put on, change clothing, remove that set of clothing, put on clothing that it's not the same quality, so you don't mind if it gets so dirty. You're not going to put on your tuxedo for this type of work. You're working in the backyard. You don't put on your nicest suit. But the question remains, wait a minute. The first thing he did, the Kohen did, also involved ash. Yes, it's not as much ash. It's just a scoop of ash. But still, it's also ash. So why do you have to change clothing? And if you're worried about the clothing getting dirty, even the regular service in the temple, you should be worried about getting dirty. The Kohen is slaughtering the animal. Blood is spurting. He's receiving the blood. He's carrying the blood, sprinkling the blood. It's very likely, highly likely, that the Kohen and his garments are going to get dirty. There's blood sprinkling all over the place. You're dealing with the animal. I mean, it's not exactly the cleanest activity. So why suddenly now are you worried about cleanliness? That you say remove, take off the clothing, and now put on a lesser set of clothing, a lesser set of priestly garments? So Rashi explains, you know what the difference is? He says, there's a difference between, in some restaurants, especially today with COVID, when he can't find any workers anymore, because no one wants to work, the owner of the restaurant, he is the owner, he is the chef, and he is the waiter. So there's a difference of how you dress when you're working in the kitchen, or how you dress when you're serving the guests. When you're serving the guests, the waiter puts on a tuxedo, you put on something nice. You're in front of the boss, or butlers in front of his boss, in front of the king, you put on your nicest. When you go back in the kitchen to prepare the meal, you change clothing. You're not wearing your finest. You get into simpler clothing. So that's what actually, that's the difference between the first part, when you go and take a scoop, and the second part, when you're removing all the ashes. Not so much, why the difference? If you're worried about cleanliness, you should also have the same set of garments when you're removing the ash. He says the difference is when you're removing the ash, you place it right next to the altar, in the holy place. So you're in front of Hashem. When you're doing service in front of Hashem, something when you're slaughtering, yes, there's blood and there's... But when you're doing the service in front of Hashem, you have to be dressed in your finest. And the Kohen would be careful, make sure he shouldn't get any blood sprinkled in him, he shouldn't get any dirt sprinkled in him, he shouldn't get any ash. He'll be careful, he's standing in front of the king. But here, when he's removing the whole entire ash, where's he removing to? He's removing it outside of Jerusalem. So you're away from the king. Yes, he goes up to the altar to take the ash, but that's just the beginning. The purpose is to remove it, to take it away from the palace, take it away from the king. Yes, it has to be in a pure place, not an impure place, but not in the holy place. You're not in front of Hashem. So therefore, now you can change your clothing. If you want, Rashi, you don't have to. If you want, he's giving good advice. Change your clothing. It's not the same. And he says, V'esh al ha-mizbeach, and the fire and the altar, tukat boy, should burn le-sichpe. It's a positive commandment and a prohibition. You're not allowed to extinguish the flame. A positive commandment and a prohibition. You have to stroke the fire constantly. You have to put up enough wood during the day, it should light for 24 hours, and you're not allowed to extinguish the flame. If you extinguish even one coal of this fire, you violated the prohibition. You get lashes, you violated the prohibition. And then he says, "Ubir le koyin etzim ba'boike ba'boike." On top of it, there's a mitzvah for the koyin to add every morning, and the truth is every afternoon, they would add, ba'boike ba'boike means every single morning, they would add two logs, a special placement of two logs, fresh logs of wood that had to be added to the fire. And the reason why the Torah seems to be repeating so many times, you should make a fire, make a fire, make a fire, the Talmud says, because they made a few fires on the altar. And each fire, each pile of fire, flame of wood, served a different purpose. And in Yom Kippur, they made four fires. And they would place on top of it, they would place the burnt offering on top of the wood, on top of the fire. And on it, after it, they would burn all the fat of the peace offerings, which most of it was eaten by the owners, but there were certain portions of fat and different portions of the animals offered in the altar. So all of this was offered after the morning sacrifice, the morning daily sacrifice. And from this we learned only after the morning daily sacrifice, but not after the afternoon daily sacrifice. The afternoon daily sacrifice was the closing sacrifice. You're not allowed to offer any other sacrifice after. The only exception was on Erev Pesach, that the Paschal lamb was offered after the daily afternoon sacrifice. Eish tamid, and he concludes, should be a constant fire, tukad, should be lit up, al mizbeach. Le-sichpe, you're not allowed to extinguish it. Rashi says that the flame for the menorah was taken from the altar. They didn't light a match and light the menorah. They took the fire from the altar and they would use it to light up the candelabra. So Eish tamid, the flame of the candelabra, which is called the constant fire, because every day you have to light the fire. Where did they take that fire from? From the altar. Okay. So this was the introduction to the service in the temple, the introduction to the sacrifice. A, you have to first make a fire. You have to have a constant fire. In order to offer a sacrifice, to burn the parts of the sacrifice, you have to have a fire on the altar. And the first service was to take away the ash from the altar and put it on the side. And then they took the rest of the ash and they brought it outside. So what does the ash represent? We say this every morning. Why is this the first service in the temple? The introduction to the service in the temple. And this is also the introduction to davening, to prayer. Prayer is a substitute for the sacrifice. So we're quoting the Torah about the removing of the ash. This is the introduction to prayer. What does this mean? So Chassidus explains that the ash represents, you know, when you burn something, everything in this world is a composite, made up of the basic elements. It's a composite of fire, energy, gas, wind, moisture, water, liquid, and earth. But a different composite is different, it's made up in a different way, and that's why you have different things. What happens when you burn something? What does fire do? Fire breaks it apart, takes the elements and breaks it apart. Before it was all together, compounded, and here it breaks it apart. And what happens? The smoke goes up, that's the gas. There's also a moistness. The liquid goes up. The fire is a fire. What are you left with? The earth, the ashes. The earth is indestructible. The ashes, that's what remains. And what does that mean on a personal level? As Alter Rebbe explained in the first part of the Tanya, the end of the first chapter in the Tanya, tanyaclass.com, that the earth represents depression, heaviness. Earth is heavy. It's the lowest element, the earth. You step in the earth represents heaviness. Everything else goes, the moistness is gone, the fire is gone, the gas is gone. What's left? what remains below? Earth, the ashes. So ashes represents a heaviness, depression. A person who's depressed is lethargic, feels heavy, very self-conscious. There's no energy, there's no life. A heaviness, a sluggishness slows you down. It weighs on you. It weighs heavily on you. It brings you down. But there's two types of depression, as Alter Rebbe explains in the Tanya. Chapter 29, there's two types of depression. There is a depression that has an element of goodness to it. It's like a medicine. Of course, medicine is not an end in itself. There's nothing good about medicine. No one sits down to have a meal of medicine. Maybe in America, people are popping pills right, left, and center. But no one sits down to have a meal of medicine. Medicine is an urgent need. So you take a medicine. But it serves a purpose. It's a medicine. Then you have a depression, which nothing good, there's nothing good there. You have to banish that. There's nothing good will come of it. There's absolutely, there's not even a spark of goodness left. And that's what it means, is before a person's davens, it says, you have to daven, before you daven, you have to have kovid roish. You have to take a moral accounting of yourself. You have to be serious. You have to self-examine yourself, a little soul-searching. Although, if you're going to do a little soul-searching and do examining, it won't take much for you to become depressed. When we realize how far we are from our potential. You know, remember we learned, why does a person make 100 blessings a day? Because what's a blessing? A blessing is to reveal, to actualize potential. It should be in abundance, because very little of our potential is ever actualized. We want a blessing, it should be in abundance, that we should be blessed to actualize our potential. And because our potential, in most cases, the human condition is, it remains so hidden and so concealed, you need 100 blessings to reveal all that potential. We have abilities we don't even suspect that we have. You know, people in special, who serve in the special forces, you know, they develop in them potential that it would almost seem miraculous. You never even suspect you're even capable of doing it. You would never think in a million years you'd even be capable of doing things. We are capable of things we don't even suspect we're capable. Mothers whose children are trapped, who lifted up a car, like Hercules, like Shimshon HaGibbor. People who are stuck in a fire and they squeezed out of this metal gates. And when they came back, you look, it was impossible. It's impossible. They couldn't fit. And they squeezed out of it. So we have such hidden potential. We're barely scratching the surface. We're barely lifting up our pinky. That's the tragedy of the human condition. We need a bracha. Every day we need 100 brachas. We need a powerful force to wake us up, to be able to actualize our potential, to increase, because we're barely, it's nothing what we're. So if a person starts making you start some soul searching, that's only not realizing potential, let alone that insult to injury, all the negativity that we do, all the negative actions that we do, and the negative actions and negative speech and negative thought. We're so far away from our potential. We're so far and distant. The way we could be and the way we should be and the way we ought to be and the way we would like to be. And you look at the reality, it's enough to make you depressed. It's like, what are we doing with our lives? But it's a necessity. It's prerequisite. Before you daven, you have to have kovid roish. You have to do a little soul search. But the difference is, the difference between bitterness and depression. Bitterness is medicine. It's bitter. It's like medicine. Medicine is bitter. But there's an energy to it. There's a life to it. It lights a fire. When a person is bitter, instead of feeling so arrogant, clueless, proud of yourself, so smug and content, like a baby who's sitting in its diapers and feels so happy and feels so good and so comfortable. When a person is so crass and low, as Alter Rebbe says, you don't even realize how crass and low you are. People who are so crass and low are clueless. They have no idea just how ridiculous they are and how crass and low they are. Because we're so smug and content and arrogant and self-satisfied, it's nauseating. So when a person feels a little bitter, it's a wake-up call. It's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. It deflates that ego bubble, that foolish sense of self, that delusionary sense of self that we constructed, and it makes you real. It wakes you up. You become human again. You become humane. You become humble. You become real. You become a real human being who can have compassion on other people and can love other people and connect with other people instead of being so gross and selfish and self-centered and self-absorbed that we become impossible, unbearable. The level of arrogance is just unbearable. And the person who's arrogant is clueless. He's strutting around like a peacock. And he's clueless how ridiculous he sounds, how ridiculous he is. So you need that level of bitterness. But it's bitter. It's a medicine to prick the bubble. It's a necessity. But there's an energy there. When you feel bitter, you're motivated to change. You're motivated to do something about it. I better get my act together. And then you relish, you rediscover that thirst and that hunger to grow and to change and to learn. Instead of being so smug and content and self-satisfied. So it's a bitter medicine and has to be administered judiciously. No one sits down to a meal of medicine. It has to be done judiciously, at the right time, at the right place, the right measure, not more, not less. But there's an energy, there's a life. That's one level. But then you have just depression. Depression is demoralized. Because depression is a sense that it's futile, it's hopeless. It's not I did something wrong. I am wrong. I am defective. If you're defective, then it's hopeless. There's nothing to fix. I might as well just throw it out in the garbage. I mean, what's the point? The more I change, the more I stay the same. Just beating up on yourself and becoming depressed. There's no energy. There's no life. There's no change. That's the difference. For example, your house is on fire. So one person grabs a bucket, grabs a pail of water, calls 911, yells to his neighbors, grabs a pail, and starts extinguishing the flame. He's crying. His whole life, his whole house is burning down, but he does something about it. That's bitterness. There's energy. There's life. There's vitality. There's action. There's change. You're fixing. You're doing something about it. Versus a person comes and sees his house on fire, and what does he do? He sits down on the sidewalk and starts crying. That's depression. It's hopeless. There's nothing I can do. All I can do is cry. There's no life there. There's no energy. There's no hope. Nothing will change. That depression has to be removed altogether. And that's what these two ashes represent. There is the ash, which is a must. It must. It must be part of your repertoire. It must be part of your life. As a matter of fact, it's the introduction. You can't pray. You can't offer a sacrifice unless you started with removing the ash. This ash is healthy. This ash is good. You take a scoop. It has to be limited. It has to be in the proper measure at the right time. And this was even done at night, before dawn. This was done at night. That's a time. Time to take measure of your life before you go to sleep. It's a time to take measure of your life. It's a time to do a little soul searching. There's a time and a place, very judiciously, a small scoop. You don't have to take a lot. And that you leave next to the altar, on the ground, right next to the altar, because that's good, that's healthy, that's holy. There's energy there, there's life there, it's important, it's essential. A person who's never bitter about anything, a person who's never upset about anything and never examines himself and never does any soul searching and any accounting, any spiritual accounting, it means you're not serious. You don't take life seriously. You don't take yourself seriously, you don't take life seriously. It's not a serious person. It's not a real person. How can you pray? How can you approach Hashem when you have no clue what's going on inside of you? So that's the introduction to prayer. You can't pray otherwise. That's the first step. That's important. It's essential. It must happen every single day. However, then you have removing the ash. This ash, the rest of the ash, the depression. That has to be completely removed out of the camp. Get it out. Away. Nothing good will come of it. There's no room for depression in a Jew's life. A Jew has to be joyful. And even the bitterness leads to joy. It's medicine, but the medicine will trigger your health. Your health is you daven with joy. Because once you feel bitter about your situation and you make a strong resolution to change, to better yourself, then you're confident Hashem will forgive you And then you can daven with Hashem and connect with Hashem with joy. That's the goal. The goal of the medicine is not medicine for the sake of medicine. The goal of the medicine is to trigger some health, a health process in your body, in yourself. Sometimes you have no choice. You're not responding to healthy food. You're not responding to healthy stimulus. So you need a strong medicine to wake you up, to trigger, to regain. But it's only there to trigger the health in your body, to trigger the joy. You don't wallow in that bitterness. So that explains, that's how Chassidus explains the two ashes. That's how the Fidik Rebbe explained.